Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to a new episode of ModPath Chat. Joining me today are two guests, actually, Dr. Peter McCaffrey from University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston and Dr. Adam Booth. Peter is the Director of Informatics at UTMB, and he's blessed with dual expertise in computational biology and microbiology. Adam has just moved from UTMB a few months ago to do his GI Path Fellowship at Beth Israel Deaconess in Boston. But during his residency at UTMB, Adam developed a passion for digital path and for utilization of social media in pathology. We'll talk about that toward the end. So thank you both for accepting my invitation.
Thank you, George. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Dr. Netto.
It's a pleasure to have you. I would like to start with a brief discussion of your modern pathology paper on prognostic model using machine learning to predict mortality in COVID. And hopefully we will have some time then to talk about the two exciting areas that you guys have excelled in, and our audience can learn a lot from you. So let's start with the manuscript. And that question is for you, Adam. Can you share with us a little bit briefly about the design and why you specifically how did you zoom in on these markers?
Well, thank you. Yeah, so we wanted to try to identify which common serum lab markers could be used to identify prognostic factors in COVID-19 patients. So using machine learning, we were able to narrow those down and find out which of 26 laboratory markers weighed the most in the patient's ultimate
outcome.
Yeah. Ultimate outcome. And and using that, we identified five that were the that weighed the most, and those were CRP, albumin, serum calcium, BUN, and lactic acid. And one thing that's very specific about those are a very common lab test, and that allows us to, most inpatients will have results for those tests.
That will make your model very applicable and widely used, not just limited to us in the United States. So I know who to ask about giving us a crash course on the jargon of these machine learning things, and I believe it's SVM model. So Peter, why don't you teach us quickly what these are and how these work?
Sure. Yeah. So we chose to use a technique known as a support vector machine for this paper, which is a complex name, but it's a tool that's been around for quite a while. Early work on this model was done in the 70s and 80s, and it's proven to be a very effective, pretty general purpose way to do what is called essentially a linear classification. So you can imagine the real operation under the hood is kind of like, you know, taking a bunch of patients and dividing them between good and bad outcome in this case, and locating where that line might go to divide them. And that's really the gist of it. And, you know, we like the support vector machine because there's a lot of packages that'll do it. You don't have to build it from scratch. It's more like tuning it to your purpose. And one little thing about it that's nice is it's what's called a wide margin classifier. And what that really means is that it looks to put that line in such a place that it's got wiggle room, if you will. So in the interest of being generalizable and useful across maybe more than one cohort or place, it's a really good place to start. And it showed that it was useful in this case. And so that was a great outcome, as simple as you can be and not too simple.
Well, so when you say packages, so is it almost like off the shelf? I mean, clearly you need some background to use it and tune it up.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, I mean, one of the really powerful things about, you know, a lot of the languages that people use for this stuff, it sounds more complex on the outside than it really is. And you think of building something in Python or R, is much of it is imported in. There's really vibrant toolkits. So what you really do as a practitioner is you tune attributes of it, and that can get very technical, but you don't have to build the model from scratch per se. And that's really nice. You can try different things and be pretty efficient about it.
And it's a good point to remember that the study involved almost 398 patients. 43 of them unfortunately died, and 355 survived it. And so I guess you were trying to find differences, and like Adam said, among 26 markers, and this machine learning helped you zoom in on the ones that could break it, consistently.
That's absolutely right. And what's nice about these models when they do learn, if you will, kind of where that line should go, you can kind of pull back out of them important things like, you know, when the model found this line, how important did it regard these lab values? And that's kind of where we got this ranking from. And the paper goes into what did the model decide without us having to necessarily tell it how important it should regard calcium. It kind of came to a conclusion that it was important. And that's informative in both ways, I think, building a model and learning from a model.
That's a very good point. So that sometimes, you know, it points to you what's important, and maybe you backtrack and try to see what's the biology behind that. That's amazing. I never thought about that.
Dr. Nando and Dr. McCaffrey, I think one other thing there is the machine learning allows us to identify relationships you might not necessarily, just see firsthand, even based on your own clinical experience. Sure, using our knowledge of physiology and pathophysiology, we can connect some of these variables. But there were several papers that we've referenced and looked at where they had, you know, identified one or two of these serum markers that, you know, led to a negative outcome. So being able to tie these things together really gave us a better picture of the view. And I think that's one of the big, most powerful things of our study.
That's very, very well said. It's just an amazing times, and fortunately, in a good way, that here we are. When this paper was accepted, we were saying no vaccine, no effective therapy. We know that. Thankfully, due to the efforts of all scientists across the world, we are in a much better place in that regard. But here we are again with the surge and a dark winter. Do you see a relevance for your model to apply? Because the denominator now is huge. And unfortunately, this week, we hit around 3,500 deaths per day at certain times. So clearly, a model like that will be very helpful on who to focus these expensive resources. Wouldn't you agree? And how do you see it?
Absolutely. I can take a stab and you can chime in, Adam, as well. So, yeah, I mean, we're far from out of the woods. And, you know, if anything, now adding new tests and a vaccine complicates the picture, you know. And what's great about models and machine learning is the model doesn't need to be static. You know, you trained it, you can retrain it, and you can retrain it, and you can retrain it. And it can evolve over time to include more data and more attributes from new patients. And as a method, I think we're going to keep doing that because we have a long way to go really before we can let our guard down. And the next year is going to be also very COVID centric.
Unfortunately so. Adam, anything else you want to add to that?
I think our, you know, as this surge is happening, I think our clinician colleagues can, you know, these values, these laboratory markers can help them if they see these ranges kind of, you know, out of whack, they might be able to be tipped off towards a poor outcome in a particular patient, hopefully in advance, which would give them enough time to try to, you know, take more aggressive measures for that patient.
And as we're hearing as of yesterday, you know, the new strains will develop, the virus will evolve, and potentially even the sequences or the strains can be plugged in such models. Hopefully it's not going to pan out, the fears that it's more aggressive, but who knows. Well, wonderful. This is very informative. So I guess we have a little extra time to, and this is the purpose of this podcast, is to start going beyond just the manuscript, so our audience can get added value. So for Peter, you know, the clearly AI and computational path is now the third revolution. And what is your word of wisdoms for us, especially those of us who grew up in a totally non-computerized environment and had to learn the basics? What do you think? I know this is important for the field, not only for digital paths, for genomic, you know, identifying variants of significance, but for our field in general and for the masses of pathologists. What's your word of wisdom? How do we approach it and how doable it is?
That's a great question. I mean, I think the thing that's important to understand is that it's not the first time we as a field have embraced a new technology. You know, people had cells and morphology before we saw it with a microscope. People had genomes before we saw it with a sequencer. So the data existed for a long time. It's just now we're packaging it into data products. But this is one of the many things in an armamentarium that we have as a field. And kind of what we do in PATH is ambitiously grapple with waves of new technology. I don't think everyone needs to know everything about it, much like, you know, everyone doesn't need to be a molecular pathologist, but it's approachable to have, you know, enough of an understanding to know where the models can be used. And I think people can be a little bit comforted that it's not as hard as it looks from the outside. And I think that we as a field will probably do more to educate our residents and we will grapple with it effectively like we have everything else. And so I would not be concerned. Not everyone has to be super deep on it, but it will offer a whole new suite of things that we can do and deliver value through.
So even people of my generation have some hope of learning it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well,
clearly, Adam excelled at it, but he had a mentor. So, right. So Adam, how do you see, I mean, for your generation, is this something that we have to teach our fellows and residents? Because by the time you guys practicing, it's going to be important, right?
Yes, sir. I completely agree with what Dr. McCaffrey said and what you said as well. You know, this is that kind of third revolution, and we're going to be able to apply these techniques and methods in all sorts of different ways in anatomic pathology and clinical pathology. You know, we have, like there in our paper, we pulled these lab values and ran this analysis. And there's, you know, if you can think of it, it's available to do that for all sorts of things within pathology. So it really opens the whole realm of what's available to us and the power and impact we can have on patients and clinical care with as far as guiding treatments and therapies kind of down the road. And not maybe identifying disease long before it even takes place and sets hold in the patients. Also, I would add that I think this revolution kind of will hopefully attract new generation of future pathologists to our specialty that, you know, that kind of grew up with the internet and the computer and computer programming and things like that. And they can see that they can not only get to use those skills that they, you know, enjoy and have learned about and perfected, but they can also use that to apply to patients and patient care. So they can not only, you know, care for patients, but they can use their, you know, the things that they enjoy, their if they, you know, their hobbies or gaming, anything like that. Like, I think it can all kind of filter into what we can do as pathologists in the future.
Awesome. I mean, we're constantly looking on new toys and tools to attract a new generation of smart people like you, Adam, to the field. And I fully agree. The other important point is we barely, you know, in the last few years started modifying the curriculum toward where molecular and genomics. And Peter, you're right. Now we don't need to know everything about it, but a depth of education for the fellows and residents is extremely important. I know in my place, that's one of the things that I've tasked our program director is you have to carve out space for molecular because it's going to impact every subspecialty. And I guess now we have to add the AI too. So constant change, which is a good thing for the field. But I have no doubt that molecular and attracted a crop of people to the field that are very intelligent and savvy, and this will do the same. So the future is great. So a couple of words, Adam, about your celebrity status as as a social media. You clearly exploited it, and all jokes aside, you've played a crucial role in several committees on CAP and even APC, Association of Pathology Chairs. So I congratulate you on your leadership. I have no doubt you're going to have an incredible career. Can you tell us, share with us how what advice and how important that is for your fellow residents and trainees at this stage to be engaged with that?
Yes, well, thank you for the kind words, Dr. Neto. I early on in residency, I saw the impact and the kind of the network and community that was on social media, particularly with Twitter, among pathologists and the opportunities there to learn. And I started out just kind of following along tweets and learning different things more diagnostically. But as that grew, I was able to kind of grow my network and meet new people. And, I saw opportunities. So I would tell residents, look for opportunities that are posted, like scholarships, awards, opportunities for collaboration, because those things all abound on there. I have, I have publications with authors that I never met in person. We had never interacted, but we were able to work together and connect through social media. And it's just tremendous. And I would urge them to get involved there and, kind of find their niche, because there's so much they can gain.
That is so true, and keep it up, and hopefully that's part of the reason we started these ModPath chat is hopefully the community will also listen to that, and the social media will I have no doubt with Adam's network. A lot of people are going to listen to this specific episode. Well, it's been a greatly enjoyable conversation. Thank you again, both, for joining ModPath Chat. And I wish all of members of our audience across the world a safe and blessed holiday. And please stay tuned for a special edition of ModPath Chat that should come your way before the end of the year, where we can look back at the year in review 2020 and the achievements that modern pathology has done, and summarize the most top downloaded and top cited papers this year. And by the way, both of you, Peter and Adam, should be happy to know that you guys' paper was among the top 20 downloaded papers. So your hard work is being appreciated. Happy holidays to both of you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having us.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Neto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.